The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome into the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom as he takes a couple days, well-deserved couple days off. What a year for Kentucky. I'll do a shameless self-plug here real early in the show so you don't have to hear it again. But on my radio show, Cameron Mills Radio, Sunday nights on many of these same stations from 7 to 9, we had my co-host did a rundown of how many times, and I'm going to forget the actual statistic, but the total number of the record that UK had versus U of L this year in all sports, counting hockey, which I think it was like 11-3, which if you go back, I want to say 8 years ago, I think it was the opposite. I mean, all sports, and I am an all sports fan. I don't just root for basketball and football, but how much fun it is to beat Louisville, especially when they have decent programs, which is arguable whether they had a decent program this year, certainly not in football. But nonetheless, welcome into the Leach Report. Leach Report is served up by Wild Eggs. You can interact with the show at Tom Leach or at the Leach Report, at Leach Report on Twitter. But Tom probably won't be manning that this hour. So you can interact with me at Cameron Mills with a Z. You can always email Tom at leachreport@gmail.com. Check the fan page for the Leach Report on Facebook or call toll-free 877-904-1080. Leach Report is served up by Wild Eggs. Wildcat News of the Day presented by Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Basketball-wise, obviously it's still a lot. Even with the bowl game, huge win by the Cats, 10-3 on the season. I'm not sure how many people had that going down earlier on as the prognosticators started discussing what the Cats were going to do this year in football. But basketball first, SI.com says the SEC looks for a thrilling conference race. Tennessee obviously back up in doing well in basketball, so it ought to be, I'm going to say us and them, but maybe there's one or other. Florida's just not, man. They struggled early in the season. Maybe they can pull it together. Catspaws.com, Kentucky signee Dante Allen. This is I just found this out this morning, folks. You all may have been following this. Dante Allen is out for the season with a torn ACL. There's been some guessing, and I don't know that intentionally. I think they were kind of hoping for the best as they were discussing his injury and saying, you know, just maybe a hyperextended knee or this, that, and the other. But no, it's Catspaws reporting it's a torn ACL, and Dante is out for the rest of the season. Now, remember, it's going to hurt his career. I can always turn back to my teammate Derek Anderson, who probably was stronger, not because of that, but was able to rebound and become a 11-year NBA athlete after his torn ACL in 1997 for Kentucky basketball. Vach Views, Tyler Hero tab for the Wayman Tisdale National Freshman of the Week, and in the Herald Leader, what Kentucky's newfound momentum could lead to in the new year, and they certainly have found it in basketball. I'm stunned they won both these games. Stunned they got beat by Seton Hall as well, but stunned they beat North Carolina and Louisville, and they looked fantastic doing both, especially Tyler Hero as he rebounds. Football-wise, let's get to the recent news. I see a blue reporting five more thoughts, notes, and milestones from Kentucky's bowl win. Mark Stoops' first bowl win, by the way. I'm sure you know that. I see a blue also reporting Penn State fires coach after Kentucky lost to Kentucky. Didn't know that either. And maybe someone can tweet me and remind me. We didn't like this guy when he was at Vandy, right? Did he do something like talk a little too much trash or something? But there was not a lot of love lost between us and Penn State's coach when he was at Vanderbilt. SaturdaysDownSouth.com, 10 things we'll remember most about Kentucky's 2018 team. Josh Allen, Vinny Snell Jr., more than likely at the top of that those 10 things. KSR says 6 moments that created UK special season, and Courier Journal, or C-J, a closer look to UK's 2019 depth chart. And we might talk to Justin Rowland a little bit about that coming up. He's on the show today, as is my dad's former teammate at Kentucky and the one and only Mike Pratt, who you can hear on a lot of these stations as well during every UK broadcast, along with Tom Leach, the namesake of this very show. We're going to get to our first break. Mike Pratt, the very only, coming up next. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom Leach on The Leach Report.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome back to the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom today. Now joined by, I'd say friend, but probably closer to my dad than he is me. And that is the other voice of the Wildcats, Mike Pratt. Hey, buddy.
Cameron, I caught you on Twitter this morning showing a picture of your dad and I.
Yes.
And, you know, I looked like I enjoyed watching Pete operate as much as the other 11,500 in Memorial Coliseum, whatever he showed up. So
I got to tell you, Mike.
He was a tiger, man. He went right after Pete, and we all had a lot of fun playing Pete. A lot of fun.
Yeah, listen, one of my I'll tell you real quick before we get into the Cats this year, but that picture is like – that is a keepsake in my family because Dad is doing everything he can. And I completely understand why you're watching, because for Dad's 50th birthday, we got him two games against you all and LSU, in which Dad actually had, I think, 16 points and 23 points in these two games. But Pete had 60 some odd. And yeah. I think it was, you know, Dad guarded him most of the time, as well as Jim Dinwiddie. I think Dad told me that he and Jim were the ones that had to guard Pete, and there really was no guarding Pete.
No, Pete had the credit card. You know, Pops coached the team, and
it helps,
Pete was special. Don't get me wrong, but he took some shots. We'd laugh about it when we talk amongst ourselves. Yes, you're there. We go like, can you believe what you think? Adolph would let us take those shots? Are you kidding me? And but he was an amazing passer.
Yeah,
so far ahead of his time in passing. There's not been many like him in passing.
Were there many people, Mike, because you make a good point. We think about his shooting, and again, I've seen the video. Yeah, he had a green light once he stepped on the court. But was his penetration, was there anybody like him as far as it could get to the basket so easily with his handles in those days?
Well, you know, back then, if you touched him, they called a foul. So Adolph would say, like, let's go out and beat him, forget about Pete, get his points, play hard against him, Terry,
yeah.
Steve Clevenger, whoever it was on him, depending yeah. on the year, you know, it was very hard to defend simply because the guy was a good foul shooter. He got all the calls because he was Pete Maravich. I mean, he led the country in scoring. So you had to be very careful. You can ask your dad that. You have to be very careful. You foul out pretty quick. Some of them weren't fouls. But saying that, trivia question for you.
Okay. All right.
People know him as a scorer. He was a scorer. And there was no three-point line.
Right.
But what was... people will refer to him as a shooter. He was not a shooter. He was a 40% shooter. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
And you can look it up. But the guy was phenomenal with the ball. And he took a lot of shots, got to the foul line, made his foul shots. I mean, he was a terrific all-around player.
Yeah.
He really was.
It was one of the greatest things where I tell kids that, Michael Jordan's good, LeBron James is good, but if you want to see something phenomenal, I mean, we're in utterly domination of another team, yet that team he dominates beats his team by 40 points. And that's what it was. You all would score 120, and LSU would score 80, and Pete would have 60. It's a lot of fun to watch. Let's get to this year's Cats. I know that's what most people want to hear from you about, even though I love talking about the old days with you. How surprised were you when you're coming into to December? What did you honestly think the Cats were going to do based on how they played before? Or did you think, okay, maybe they can turn it around against Carolina and Louisville?
Well, before the season, I was really concerned about their defense, if that's part of an answer to you. And, but I never thought they would hit an offensive slump, Cameron, like they did. I think directly, no matter what anybody says, you played, you know how quickly you can lose your confidence as a player and how quickly you can get it back. Sometimes it takes a while. So that was shocking to me. The defense has gotten better. I use benchmark games like the December games, starting with Greensboro, a good, solid mid-major team. Duke obviously was a benchmark game, and that went the wrong
right.
way.
Yeah.
Then you look at North Carolina, you look at Louisville. And benchmark to me is, as a coach, this is what I compare my team's development to. Are they getting better? You know, are individual players collectively, are they getting better? So going into North Carolina, I thought they had a shot to win, okay? I think they have enough talent with a shot to win against anybody if they're playing. What I saw against Carolina, and you saw it again against Louisville, a passion for the game, okay? Cal calls it, what does he call it, bite? Okay, you well, call it what you want.
Yeah, what was the word he used? I thought it was perfect.
Do what?
I said, what was the word he used in a recent press conference? And I'm blanking on it now just as you are, but he used the word that I thought, yeah, that's exactly how they need to play. But, yeah, passion basically explains it up.
Yeah, I like that. I'm familiar with that kind of, you know, feeling. But you can use a lot of different words. Find one that fits you. And they just came out and played together, made the extra pass, and played with a passion. I mean, how many times did they get beat on 50-50 balls? Not many recently, okay? And that's pretty important. The work on the glass has been good. They're pretty good. They're pretty good when they play like that.
Yeah. Why do you think, and I think you already answered the question, but I'm going to ask you anyway because I want you to speak to it a little bit. You mentioned the word confidence, and to me that's, you know, you could take a guy like Tyler Hero who looks so good in the Bahamas, and look, I don't know, you could probably answer this more honestly than I could. I don't know how good those teams were we played in the Bahamas. I think we got a false sense of security about how good we were because I don't think those teams were very good, but maybe they were. But we looked like a different team than we looked at the beginning of this season. And when you talk about our shooting slump or our scoring slump, that basically started happening. I mean, that was from opening tip-off until maybe UNC, right?
Yeah. I mean, we got better against Utah, got better against Greensboro, and then we took a step back against Seton Hall, but now we're back on the track.
Yep.
Those teams over there, one team was really good. It turned around, beat Michigan a couple weeks later. They were pretty good.
Okay.
You know what happens, Scammer, in your experience. Sometimes guys get a little, you know, I was guilty of this. Ask your dad, I'm sure he'll say the same thing about guys we played with. You get kind of pig-headed. You get kind of, okay, I'm pretty good. Everybody's telling me I'm pretty good, particularly in this environment of social media.
Right.
And you quit paying attention to the little things that made you play so well in the Bahamas. Then when you play somebody like Duke, start the year, boy, it's a punch in the nose, man.
Which was one we probably needed.
Yes, if my assumption is correct, but I'm not giving you any inside baseball.
Right.
Just experience tells me that they weren't on the same growth track that they were before the Bahamas. They got behind the curve, and they were slow to get ahead. And I think now they're starting to get ahead, and we're seeing it.
Yep. All right, Mike, we're going to take a quick break. Come back with us on the other side of it?
I'll do it.
All right, we're talking to Mike Pratt on the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Welcome back to the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom today, joined right now by Mike Pratt. Mike, let's go back and I know we want to celebrate the U of L and UNC game, but I like you, I guess as former players, I'm not interested in winning in December as much as I am in March, and I will take a loss right now, even though we didn't have one, I guess Seton Hall certainly, but I'll take a loss now as long as we learn from it and continue to grow, because I think, as you said, what matters is that we're getting better. In what way since Duke, because Duke was such a debacle, but in what way have you seen us grown the most? What area of the game have we gotten the best at since the Duke game?
Okay, two areas, I think. First of all, defensively. We weren't helping. Duke spaced the floor. It turned Williamson loose off the bounce and others, and they got to the basket. We weren't helping. And as we went through, we weren't helping the helper, which is team basketball. You understand that. I think a lot of people out there watch that happen. I mean, if somebody goes to help a teammate, someone's got to help the guy who's giving help. So we always call it help the helper. Yep. And that's a rotation. Some people use rotation. That's gotten a lot better. It's gotten a lot better, which means they're in tune to each other, okay, and they're supportive of each other. And I like that. The other area is how do you put this? You know, when you get down, you got to get up, and you got to get up the right way. When you fall behind, you don't get back in the game by chucking and ducking.
Okay? Gotcha.
Get back in the game by moving the ball, by executing better, by getting good shots, and then playing D. But the quality of shots we were getting after we fell behind against Duke, I thought was not good at all. And we had a lot of that in November. We tried to do it all ourselves in what I call chuck and duck, and that wasn't going to get it done. So those two areas, I think, you saw Louisville made some runs at them.
Yeah.
Carolina made runs at them.
Yeah.
They stuck with their execution, got better shots. Things worked out.
I think that was the most impressive thing to me against Carolina, is that Carolina made runs, but there was never a sustained run. There was always, I mean, we looked like a mature basketball team against Carolina, more so even than we did against Louisville, because I like your phrase, chuck and duck, because we weren't, you know, jacking up threes in desperation or in nervousness. We weren't holding on to the ball and trying to run clock, as you see a lot of inexperienced teams do when another team's making a run. We did the same thing we did the whole game, which was we played our basketball. And I think one thing Cal has said is we got a lot more unselfish. You mentioned the unselfishness on defense. We got a lot more unselfish on offense as well.
Well, that absolutely plays into what I said. I think when a team gets down to answer that run, I'm a run guy. As a coach and playing for Coach Rupp, you understood runs. And you've got to have answers to runs. Coaches call timeout. That's an answer. But you've got to do something after that. And what you do is play better defense, rebound better, and get better shots. And well, there's an old saying, the guy that gets the longest in the last run is the winner. So we answered runs in this month, with the exception of Seton Hall, although – That's not fair because both teams shot it terrible. You know, it wasn't much of a game, period. But against Carolina and Louisville, we answered their runs with good plays, with good defense, the whole deal. So that's a real growth period.
I asked you this earlier, and I got in the midst of my question. I got off on another question. But can you talk real quick? We've got about a minute left here. Can you talk about the importance of confidence? You mentioned that word earlier, and I look at a guy like Tyler Hero, and I think, okay, he's got to be. I know he's a shooter. I know he's confident in his shot. But that translates differently when you're on the court and you're in front of 24,000 people at home, millions of people on national television against Louisville and North Carolina, and then all of a sudden he pops out of that slump. How does somebody do that? And I know you know, but kind of explain what someone goes through, the process mentally of, my shot's not here, but I'm going to keep shooting anyway.
You got to figure out how to flush the missed shots or the missed putts, the stray drives, whatever. You got to flush them mentally, which means you've got to block out everything around you, I think, and think about nothing but making the next shot when you take it. And just, I'm going to make this. You know, you got to be. Coaches can't give confidence. I think they can encourage confidence. See what you think of that, Cam.
Yeah.
You can't give somebody. That's got to come from within. And as a shooter, as a player, you got to make something happen. And number one way to do it is go out and play good D, come with a deflection, a steal, get a rebound, and take your mind off the last missed shot, and away you go. And then what I liked about what Tyler did last couple games, and some others too, Kelvin Johnson, when you make a couple, stay with it.
Yep.
I mean, you just got to stay with it. You can't go away from what is going good. And if you're going good, you're getting good shots, you know, stay with it.
Mike Pratt joining us on the Leach Report this morning. You can hear him on every UK broadcast along with Tom Leach. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it, bud.
See you, Cameron.
All right. We'll be right back. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom Leach on the Leach Report.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom today. Sorry. Just that last two segments with Mike Pratt, brought to you by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Next two segments with Justin Rowland of Rivals.com, brought to you by Shuffle Bean Coffee. Justin, how are you?
I'm good, Cameron, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Listen, take us back to, I don't know, what, September? And you're guessing, you're prognosticating about what Kentucky football is going to do this year. Where did you honestly have them? What was your expectation?
I was right in the 7-5, 8-4 range, and I kind of leaned towards 7-5 just because the quarterback play, there was so much uncertainty. I did think the schedule was manageable, although the schedule turned out to probably be a little bit tougher than I thought because Florida was pretty good, and you know, and Missouri turned out to be good, but I obviously couldn't have anticipated how much the defense improved. and we knew Josh Allen was going to be good, but it's one of the worst pass defenses in college football last year. They were one of the best this year. I mean, they were certainly better than I thought they would be.
What do you attribute Josh Allen's improvement to? I mean, obviously, it's not, you can't just have one pass rush. You can't have just one guy like him who, you know, he may make an occasional play, but he's got to have players and teammates draw a lot of attention. So even if he does get double teamed, you know, he's not getting triple teamed. He's not getting completely focused on. So he's got to have improved a lot from last year to this year. So in what way and how do you think he improved the most?
I think Brad White was a really great addition to the staff by Mark Stoops. He's an NFL guy. He looked at Allen, somebody who is not far away from the NFL, and he's a great coach of the technical side of the game, obviously. He wasn't a recruiter in the NFL. He's doing a pretty good job of that now, but he knew what Allen needed to do to take his game to the next level. And you know, Allen showed flashes as a junior. He had seven and a half sacks the first half of the season and zero sacks, zero tackles for loss the second half of the season. It was just a matter of getting his body built up, especially in the lower body where he improved so much, to the point where he could sustain that for an entire season. And I think Brad White, coupled with those strength room gains, were probably the difference.
I think that's the most impressive thing to me because you can change – on some level, a coach can instill some sort of killer instinct or attitude on a player, no matter what the sport is, of effort and want to juice and that kind of thing. But physically, to make that kind of transformation, and like, I don't know that he got bigger, but he got more durable, as you said, and there had to be a level of, okay, in the off season in the weight room, that's where Josh Allen's making his strides, but it didn't seem to happen till this year. And a lot of times that's a transition, whether, again, no matter what sport, freshman to sophomore year, you make those big things because you're adjusting that first year. But for him to make it, you know, this deep into his career just was amazing to me.
Yeah, and what really strikes me about Allen's season is it's very rare, even with the best players in the sport. Usually there's like one or two games where they just don't play well. And I think every single game, he was probably the best player on the field. I mean, from Mississippi State, when he drew like 50 yards of penalties against the Bulldogs, just completely shut down any South Carolina comeback, was the best player on the field in the Swamp, you know, with so much talent. And then against Penn State, when they had a month to prepare for him, he still had three sacks, and he was double-teamed. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a player at Kentucky, almost anywhere else, who has so consistently, week in, week out, been the best player on the field. It's really, really a remarkable testament to him.
Did he even, and I missed this part of the game, so I was going on secondhand information, but did he get his hand on a field goal, too?
Yeah. I think I went back and watched that in slow motion. I think it was him that got through, ripped through, and got the block. Yeah, the tip.
Let's one more question about Josh Allen, and I'm going to do a two-part question, Justin. Sorry about this. But rank him, and you don't have to give me the other players, but top five UK all-time, top 10 UK all-time, offense, defense, players, and then where do you think he gets drafted?
I mean, my memory only goes back to, like, the early 90s. But
that's fair. Mine, too.
Yeah, I think he's the best football player that Kentucky has had since I've been watching. And I know I'll take some heat from that. I know Tim Couch is the number one pick. But I think, frankly, some of that, he was obviously a great talent. Some of that was they were ahead of the rest of college football in that system, and defenses hadn't totally adjusted. No knock on him. I would say the top two that I've seen are Randall Cobb and Josh Allen. And just in terms of, you could take Randall Cobb and put him on Alabama, you could take Josh Allen and put him on Alabama, and they would be Alabama's best player. And I don't think you could probably say that about anybody else Kentucky's ever had.
And then what about, where do you think he actually gets drafted? And do you think he upped it in this game?
Yeah, I think he did. I think he'll be a top three pick. I don't know if he's going to be first. We'll just have to see what teams need. But, I mean, where's his stock going to go from here? You're going to put him in an interview room with NFL people, and he's going to blow them away.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I didn't think he had anything to gain from playing in this game, but the more I think about it, I think he did gain something.
You know, it's one of those things where, Justin, you can, if he plays badly, then everybody comes in and says, see, you know, all you can do is hurt yourself in these games. But if you – and that's, I think, what I'm impressed. Not only did he play, not only did he and Vinny play – when they didn't have to, and I struggle with that idea that, you know, you don't have to, but I certainly understand the prospect of what they have in the future. But not only did they play, but they played well. I mean, I know Vinny had something to run for. Josh just was playing to play, and I think for his teammates. But to come out in on that national stage and have that big a game, to me, was just it was awfully impressive. Justin Rowland's joining us from Rivals.com. We're going to get to a quick break, and we'll be right back with more with Justin. Tom Leach on the Leach Report. Actually, it's Cameron Mills filling in for Tom Leach on the Leach Report. We'll be right back.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Welcome back to the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom. Justin Rowland of Rivals.com joining us right now. That's presented to you by Shuffle Bean Coffee. Justin, let's go ahead and do the things that fans do, that the media does, that the coaches are probably doing on a very serious level. Hopefully the players are just enjoying the win. But let's look ahead to next year. What do you think we're going to be after what we're going to lose? And go through, but let's get beyond Vinny Josh. What else are we going to lose this year, and what do we have coming back?
In my mind, I don't want to minimize the loss of Snell or Allen, but I think they're going to be okay in the backfield. I like the running backs. They've got A.J. Rose, Kavushier Smoke, Chris Rodriguez, Travis Tisdale. I think they'll be okay by committee there. Josh Allen, you don't replace that one guy, but I actually believe that their front seven could be better as a whole next season.
As a whole,
think about Marquon McCall, Quentin Bohanna, Calvin Taylor, Josh Pascal, Chris Oates, DeAndre Square. They're going to be super talented on the front seven. The biggest question mark in my mind is the secondary, because I feel good about Devontae Robinson, Tyrell Agee, Yusuf Corker, Jordan Griffin, the safeties. The two cornerback spots, I think, are big question marks. And if you're having to send more guys to get pressure without Allen, and you've got two very green cornerbacks, to me, the season's going to come down to the teams Kentucky faces. Are those passing games going to be good enough to capitalize on a pass defense that's probably going to be pretty questionable? And the good news is I think they have a very manageable schedule. So I think it's still possible they win 7-8, maybe even more games.
You know, the problem is, and it's always the way, you do very well one year, and then the next year you go back to 7 or 8 wins, and all of a sudden we're thinking and can be lured into thinking we're backtracking when maybe it's just an evidence of the schedule. But it's been a long – I go back to the question I asked you at the very beginning of this, which is where you thought – I guess I was guessing. Of course, I don't have any sort of expertise in football at all, but I guess I'm sort of guessing 7 or 8. I just want improvement, and it's going to be hard to improve record-wise, at least on this year.
Yeah, and next year is going to be a real test of the maturity of the Kentucky fan base, I think, because Bill
well
is spoiled. You're the only team in the country that over the last 6 years has seen their team's record stay the same or improve.
Yeah.
And at some point, whether it's next year or the year after, it's not going to improve. You're just not. You're not going to go 12-0. You're not going to go 11-1, probably. So you look at every coach that's gone to a bad situation and built a long-term consistent winner, whether it's Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin, Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be willing to weather the occasional downtick in the win total and look at the big picture. It's not, you know, going to 10, 11 wins consistently. It's putting your name in the conversation at the end of the football season in big bowl games consistently, solid bowl games consistently. That's what changes the perception of the program. And sometimes a little up, sometimes a little down, but on the whole, you know, they're moving in the right direction.
Let's talk recruiting then. Who do we have coming in that you think is going to surprise this Kentucky fan base as far as personnel?
I think some guys, the junior college defensive backs, Quandre Mosley and Brandon Echols, are obviously going to be very important to next year's team. I think they need at least one starter out of that duo. Obviously, everybody knows about J.J. Weaver and Jared Casey at linebacker. They've got a crazy amount of young linebacker talent in the program. I really like Travis Tisdale, a running back. I think he could compete for second-string carries next season. And another dark horse name, I guess, would be DeMarcus Harris. I mean, he's the lowest-ranked recruit on Rivals that Kentucky has, but he led the state of Florida at his highest level of football in receiving this year. And he's been just an insanely strong production guy so far. I wouldn't be surprised if he exceeds expectations as well.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit. I told you we'd talk mainly football. Let's talk a little basketball as well. I'm just more comfortable doing that. Yeah. What did you think as far as the schedule in December? I guess the Seton Hall game was in December. Let's kind of kick that one out for a while and hope that's just one of those games where you lose, yes, but you learn. How surprised were you at the two big games Kentucky had in December in which they won rather easily?
I think in hindsight, the Seton Hall game is kind of where things started to change. You notice things were kind of coming together for them a little bit more. Seton Hall played at a high level, but I was shocked by those two games, Carolina and Louisville, because there was nothing going into the Carolina game that led me to think they were capable of playing 40 consecutive minutes
exactly.
of high-level, intense rivalry basketball. And lo and behold, they played 80 consecutive minutes of basketball at that level, and they did it in one game at one tempo and in another game at another tempo. And, I mean, to me, what's inexplicable is how Ashton Hagans just suddenly figured out that he's an awesome basketball player. Like, it doesn't make sense to me how he just started playing like an all-SEC point guard, but if that's who he is and it looks real, it looks like it's something he can sustain, then the sky is the limit for this team.
So we talked to Mike.
His transformation has been incredible.
We talked to Mike Pratt earlier in the show, and the thing he mentioned right off the bat was confidence, and I think that's what you're seeing with Ashton. Talent is obviously an important factor, but believing you belong, believing you're an exceptional player, whether you are or you aren't, it's going to up your game. I mean, you obviously have you can get in a situation where someone comes out and starts gunning because they think they're a better scorer than they are. But you know, playing within yourself, but playing above yourself too is important, and I think that's what Ashton, certainly what I put down to Tyler, and I think Tyler had all the confidence in the world. I think he was struggling with this confidence, though, after that Duke game, and I think we've seen that, because everyone's been saying, when is Tyler going to have a game like we saw in the Bahamas, or if you saw any of his high school games, which I saw one of them, you're like, yeah, where's this kid? And then all of a sudden, here's this kid.
Yeah, for sure. And I think playing North Carolina was a good thing for Hagans, because they're a team that's not going to back down. They're going to let you run. And Hagan saw in the first minute of that game, he was the fastest, most explosive guy up and down the court. And he became more empowered on both ends of the court as that went on. I was probably more impressed with him against Louisville in more of a grinded-out half-court game. Showed a lot of maturity. And what about the maturity of P.J. Washington? I mean, he's a guy who consistency has been the issue for. And he is now, he doesn't have to score 15, 20 points to have a huge impact on the game. Just the little things that he's doing, defending, you know, deflections, rebounding, just making the quiet plays. That's something he wasn't doing before in his career, and it speaks to his maturity.
I think maturity is the exact right word. I love watching him play where, okay, and you have to do this as a fan. You have to get in that box score and see, okay, let's go beyond point total, because that's what he's doing. And I think that's honestly, this is where Cal's genius is. I know he's good at recruiting, and there can be some question of that, I guess, from the last few years. He's not going to get a number one recruiting class every year, though we've almost had that. But it's that when we get towards the middle of the season, and he talked about it in his press conference, I think, after North Carolina game, is that this is what makes him old. You know, dealing with the immaturity things. Ashton Hagans talking trash at the end of the Louisville game, or the Carolina game, whatever it was, where it's just like, what are you doing? We're up 10. We're going to win. Just keep your mouth shut and let the scoreboard do your talking. But it's guys like PJ who kind of are hidden by their point total, but if you really watch the game, they're doing all those little things, and the maturity comes in where they're happy doing that. They're okay doing that. That is such a break from these guys in when you get them in AAU, when they're the man. They're the ones that are supposed to do the scoring. That's why we get them to come here, because they're great ball players, but yet all of a sudden I'm okay playing a role. And we have to have role players at Kentucky, because not everyone's going to be an Anthony Davis.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, maybe we shouldn't have been so worried about this team, because they've got a lot of guys who play really hard. We were talking about the personalities of this team all offseason, guys either having something to play for, a chip on their shoulder, something to prove, being alpha dogs. I think the real surprise is not how they're playing now. The real surprise is how poorly they were playing earlier. That's what doesn't make sense to me. They're where we thought they were going to be, you know, 2 or 3 months ago right now. And, I mean, 17 blocks and 20 steals over the last two games, it comes back to that defensive identity. Ashton Hagans is having a singularly greater defensive impact on the game than any Kentucky player I've seen since Anthony Davis. And everybody else is feeding off that. Tyler Herro you know, not the greatest on-ball defender. He's making a huge defensive impact the way he's playing passing lanes and anticipating and using his hands. And, I mean, this team had to carve out a defensive identity, and that's what they're doing.
I'll ask you a question I just got on Twitter a few minutes ago, and that were, who do you see going forward now? Who are the keys? Who do you think the X factor is going to be? That question was Justin Maynard on Twitter sent to me. But who do you see as the X factors going forward? I mean, it's difficult on one level because I always kind of think it's got to be a team thing. But who are those keys that we have to be consistent for us to do anything special this year?
I mean, I think if Hagans continues to play at this level, that's a big variable because he's a freshman and he's still so young. And Calipari's teams run into a couple of walls during the season. Usually, and then they get it right at the right time. I think if Hagans can sustain this level of play, that's one big variable. And the other thing is P.J. Washington. I think if he continues to play with this level of maturity, not needing to score 20, 25 points to stay interested on both ends of the court. And the last guy I'll throw in is E.J. Montgomery. You know, I don't want to throw Nick Richards out, but it seems like Calipari really wants E.J. Montgomery to get it this year. It seems like he keeps going back to him because he knows he's got this wealth of untapped potential that can just impact the game on both ends of the court. He's not going to be Anthony Davis, but he's different than the other two big men that are playing a lot for Kentucky. And I think Cal really is trying to work on him and get something out of him.
Got about a minute and a half here, Justin. Let's talk about Nick Richards a little bit. Obviously, down in the Bahamas, he looked great. This summer during some press conferences where they brought in the returning players, he sounded like he had grown up in 3 months. Like all of a sudden he started talking team, he started talking effort, you know, and not that he ever spent a lot of time talking about himself, but it just seemed like he gets it now, at least how you approach the media. You know, you don't always need to give them everything. And he just started saying the right things. And then this year, maybe it's a personnel issue, maybe it's a him issue, but where do you think Nick falls in this lineup as we go further into March?
I think there's going to be a place for him. Like, there are going to be games when they need somebody to give them, you know, 5-6 minutes at a time. And, you know, in his limited action, I think he's rebounded on the whole better than he did last year. And he's shown a better radius getting to the ball, you know, in the paint and around the paint. I just think at Kentucky, when you're always going to be pushed by such talented players,
yeah.
I mean, if you have a glaring weakness in your game and he's just not a very offensively polished player, it's hard to get consistent minutes because how do you take Reed Travis off the court? How do you take PJ Washington off the court? You're not going to play, you know, Travis with Richards all that often. It's just, I mean, I hope that he knows he's a developmental guy, and if he sticks around at some point, he's going to make a huge impact. And that's
I think the best bet is for him to look at himself on some level as like a Dennis Rodman type player where he puts his focus on, okay, I'm not going to score 15 this game. I don't need to score 15 this game. I got to go out here and get, you know, three or four blocks and double-digit rebounds. And that's his focus. Justin Rollins of Rivals.com joining us on the Leach Report. Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it, my friend.
Thanks, Cameron.
We'll be right back. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom Leach on the Leach Report. Welcome back to the Leach Report. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom today. Leach Report is served up by Wild Eggs. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Shannon the Dude for helping produce today. By the way, I mentioned the stat at the beginning of the show. Overall, from December, I think 29th, 2017, to the end of this year, Kentucky was 9-3 against Louisville. Thanks for listening. Cameron Mills filling in for Tom Leach on the Leach Report.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow The Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it.